Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Soito Daf Lamed Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Please take note that today's shiur begins three lines from the bottom of Daf Lamed Gimel Amid Beis. At the end of our previous shiur, we mentioned that we would be involved with a sugya that started several lines from the end of our Daf until Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis, concerning the Jewish people in the time of Yehoshua crossing the Yarden River, the Jordan River, which actually split. And we continue in that theme, three lines from the bottom, with a Tanaic source that you'll notice is actually very long. This source will continue down practically all of Daf Lamed Dalid Omid Aleph. Not only that, but we should point out this source comes from the Tosefta that we saw in our previous year, Perek Ches. And the Perek Ches Tosefta will be quoted continuously throughout the Gemara on, we'll say, Daf Lamed Dalet, today's shir, and then when we get to Daf Lamed Hey, you will notice it. The same brisa is quoted further there on Lamed Hey Omid Aleph and on Lamed Hey Omid Beis as well. So we continue in the text now. Three lines from the bottom of Daf Lamed Gimel Omid Beis, Tanya. Rabbi Yossi Omer, B'shloisha Mekoymois Nosu Kayhanim Es Ha'aron. In three places, on three occasions, instead of the regular people charged with the carrying of the Aron, which contained the Ten Commandments, generally it was carried by the Levium from the Kehos branch of Shevet Levi. And on three occasions, the Kohanim took over. Technically speaking, the Kohanim were also from Kehos, but they're a more specific, a subdivision of the tribe. What are the three occasions? Kishavru es Yarden, when they crossed the Yarden with Yehoshua. At that point, the Kohanim carried the Aron. And Kishasevu es Yericho, when they surrounded Yericho also at the time of Yehoshua. And Kishachziru l'mekoymoi. This is a reference to the time of Shlomo HaMelech, who built the Beis HaMikdash for a number of years after the destruction of the Mishkan in the time of Eli HaKohen. The Mishkan there had stood for 369 years. After that destruction, the Aron was in different locations, and at the point that it was brought to the newly erected Beis HaMikdash in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, the Kohanim carried the Aron to the Kodesh HaKodashim. We continue at the top of the Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph. The Kevon Shenitbalu Ragli Kohanim Bamayim, we're now referring to the crossing of the Yarden in the time of Yehoshua. As soon as the feet of the Kohen were submerged in the water, and they were on the eastern bank of the Jordan River, they're moving from east to west. They're crossing into Eretz Yisrael from what we call Transjordan. So they're going from east to west. As soon as the legs of the Kohanim, the feet of the Kohanim, touched the water, so to speak, they were dipped in the water on the eastern bank, the Jordan River, instead of continuous flow, it stopped flowing at that point, and the water that was running downstream, of course, just kept running downstream, and the water that was coming from upstream till that point stopped, and it actually started to flow up in the air, anti-gravity. That's what's meant over here. Chazru hamayim lachoreim. Literally, the water backed up, but we'll see later that it means that it, instead of flowing downstream, it started to flow up into the air. Shneimar uchvoi noisei ha'oron ad hayarden vayamdu hamayim hayordim milamalo komu neid echad. And as the Nosei Oron, the ones who were carrying the Oron, reached the Yarden, so water stopped its regular flow and stood Neid Echad. Neid is a wall. It formed a wall, meaning it flowed upwards. V'kama goyven shomayim, and how high did the water reach? And on the side of our Gemara, we have as our topic heading the Kriyas Yarden. Under the Nosei topic heading, and we have points 1 and 2 are Shtei Shitois Be'inyan Goven Shel Mei HaYarden B'Shash Avru Yisrael. That's what we've written on the side. These numbers 1 and 2 represent the two opinions. How high did the water reach? And that's what is being asked in the source. Kama Goivon. Goivon means height. Kama Govon. How high did the water reach? So you see number 1, Shnei Moser Mil, and then later there's a number 2, Yeser Mishloish Meois Mil. One says 12 mil, and the other opinion says 300 mil. Mil is about a kilometer. So the first opinion says that the water, it stopped flowing downstream, and what happened? It reached the height of Shnei Moser Mil, Al Shneim Osur Mil. It formed a type of wall measuring 12 mil by 12 mil, and that dimension, Keneged Machne Yisrael, is the same dimension, the same size as the Jewish camp, Divrei Rebbe Yehuda. The thinking is that the entire camp, the entire Jewish people, which measured 12 meal by 12 meal, would cross the Yarden in the meantime while the water is not flowing down, and as soon as they would finish crossing, the water would then resume its normal flow. Omar, and that's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Omar lo Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Shimon, l'dvorecha, according to your approach. Odom kal o mayim kalim. Kal in this case means swift or fast. Which flows faster? Mayim kam, does water flow faster, or does man walk faster? If you had a race between the flow of water and a man walking, so hevi omer mayim kalim, water of course flows faster than a man walks. And im kain, if that's the case, if you say the water simply reached a height of 12 mil and then that's it started to resume its flow after reaching that height, then boyin mayim v'shofen osan, the Jewish people would still be in the river's channel when the water would resume its flow, and it would come in then and drown them. Elo, so Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon comes up with his approach. Melamed shehoyu mayim nigdashin v'oilin kifin al gabi kifin. The water piled up, piles upon piles. A cave, kif is like an arch. Arches and arches of water rising higher and higher. Yeser mishloish meos mil. More than 300 mil into the air. Ad shiro oisen kol malchei mizrach umaravet. Reaching a height like that, so nations from, to all the nations to the east and to the west, saw it. Shinemar, the Pasuk says, in Yoshua Perakei, Pasuk Aleph, Vayikishmoa kol malchei hamoriah sheb eiver hayarden yama, all the Amorite kings that were west of the Jordan, v'chol malchei haknan yisher al hayam es asher hoivish Hashem es mei hayarden b'nei b'nei Yisrael ad ovrom. The Canaanite kings also heard about the almighty hovish, is from where yavesh, dried out the waters of the Jordan because of the Jewish people, and the water remained, the riverbed remained dry ad avram, until the Jewish people crossed. Vayimas levavam v'loyabem oid ruach b'nei b'nei Yisrael, and they suffered feelings of despair. They had no more spirit to war against the Jewish people. So the Pusuk indicates that nations far away from that actual site were able to see the water, indicating that it reached much, much more than 12 mil in height. V'af Rochav HaZoyna Omro L'Shluchi Yoshua. Rochav was the woman who hosted, who hid the two spies that Yoshua had sent to scout out the land before they crossed. So her name is Rochav HaZona. Zona is an expression that the Mephorshim have different takes on it. The standard use of the word Zona has to do with harlotry. Another approach is she was an innkeeper, and the word Zona from the word Mizona, she fed her guests. So Rochav the Zona said to the Shluchei Yoshua, to the emissary sent by Yoshua, Kishamanu es shehovish Hashem es me yam suf v'chulei. We heard about the Almighty's drying out the sea in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu when the Jews crossed the Yam Suf. Uksiva nishma v'imas levavenu v'lo koma oid v'chulei. And she too expressed this feeling of despair, hearing that how the Almighty changes the laws of nature. The Almighty, of course, controls the laws of nature, and He's, for the sake of His people, is willing to change them. Let's note what Rashi says. V'af Rochav Omro L'Shluch Yeshua Kodem She'avru Asiyardin. Rochav was speaking to these emissaries before the Jordan itself had split. Shall Kriyas Yamsuf Hoyu Mispachadin Adayin. They were still fear-struck over the fact that here you have a people for whom God changes the laws of nature, and they were still trying to deal with that enormity even before the Jordan River split. Just parenthetically, I'm using the word split out of convenience, but the splitting of the sea in the time of Moshe and what happened at the Jordan, they operated a bit differently. One simple reason might be that in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu dealing with the sea, where the water isn't necessarily flowing in the same way that a river flows. And so in the case of the Jordan River, the water that was flowing downstream just flowed, kept flowing downstream, and that which was coming upstream stopped. And hence you have this description of it piling up in the air. Let's continue in our Gemara text. After learning about the nations of the world being aware of God's control over nature, as was witnessed in the Kriyas Yamsuf, and then subsequently with regard to the Jordan River. There's a double underline marking that is explained on the side under the Nosei / Mivneh heading. Oidom b'yardin omar lehem Yeshua. That's the phrase that you see highlighted while the Jewish people were still in the Yardin, in the water, in the channel of the river, which at this point would have become dry. Tzivuyim she Yeshua la'am Yisrael b'shal she'ovru es Yardin. These are different commands that Yeshua issues when they are still in the river channel. The Gemara. Oidom b'yardin omar lehem Yeshua. While they were still in the Yarden, in the Jordan River, he said to the people, "Du ama tem oivrim es haYarden. You should let it be known, be aware of why we are crossing the Jordan. Amanas shetorishu es yoshvei haaretz mipnechem. In order for us to take over the land, to literally to inherit the land from those that are its current dwellers." Shinemar v'hoirashtem es kol yoshvei haaretz mipnechem. You are expected to take over the land from all those that are currently dwelling there. Im atem oisim kein mutav. If you do thusly, if you vanquish the inhabitants and take over the land, then that's good. V'im lav, if you're going to be some kind of a peace lover, it's good to love peace, by the way, but not in this context. In this context, with regard to the conquering of the land of Israel, there are specific divine instructions to eliminate the local population. And if you don't take over the land, boyin mayim v'shoifim osichem, the water will come and drown us. My osichem, you would think that what Yoshua is saying, that if you don't cooperate, so the water will drown you. That you would have said Eschem. What is Osichem? The strange spelling, the addition of the Yud. The Osichem means Osi ve'eschem, myself included. I, along with you, will all be drowned. Oidom b'yardein, Omer lem Yoshua, while they were still in the Jordan, Yoshua said, Harimu lochem ish even achas al shichmo lemispar shivtei Yisrael. The mispar means the number of the tribes. That's the 12 tribes. So he's ordering 12 stones. Harimu is to pick up. Harimu lochem, each man, one stone, up till the number of the tribes. It'd be 12 people will be each one picking up a stone. Uksiv, and in Pasuk Vov it says, Leman tia zois ois bekirbechem, ki shalun b'nechem mocho lema mo avonim o'ele lochem. The stones will be then set up as a monument for future generations to that when they ask, what are these stones? What is their significance to you? You will tell them, Simin Lebonim, it's a sign to the future generation, She'ovru Avois Es Hayardin, that the forebearers, this generation of Yoshua, crossed the Yarden. So it's a monument, a testimony to this miraculous event. Oidom b'Yarden, Omar Lohem Yoshua, while they were still in the Jordan, he said, Sulochem mizem mitocha Yarden, mimatzav ragli akayanim ochein, shtem esre avonim. Here in Pasuk Gimel, there's a reference made to another set of 12 stones. These are different stones that Yoshua ordered to be picked up from the river, from where the Kohanim were standing. We said 12 stones. Vavartem oisam imochem. You will carry them with you. Vinachtem oisam b'molon eshetolinu bo halayla. And they will be taken to the place that they will encamp that night. These stones, as we indicated, are different than the stones mentioned before. The stones mentioned before are stones that were to be erected there in the river as a monument to their crossing. These stones are those that will be carried to Har Grizim and Har Evel, and that very same night would then be brought to Gilgal, and we'll see more about what their purpose was. The instruction involved, take them to the Malon Asher Talinu Bo Halayla, Yochol B'chol Malonu Malon. Does it mean that they are to carry the stones with them wherever they encamp? Talmud Lomar Asher Talinu Bo Halayla. No, that one night they're going to carry the stones and then put them down in the encampment of that night. Before we go further, let's note Rashi, and what we're saying now will have, let's say, significance for Gemoras we will see later on. There's Rashi, Harimu Lochem. Rashi that I'm looking at is about halfway down the page. Harimu Lochem. Haim, and that's a reference to the stones mentioned in Pasuk Hey. Haim Avonim Shekimu Tachas Matzav Ragle Kolim Zichroin Lios Simin Lebonim Shavru Avos Esayardein. These are the stones that in Pasuk Tes you see them setting up the monument as a testimony for future generations that this generation crossed the Yarden. Next Rashi, Su Mize Mitocha Yarden Mimatzav Chulei. The Pasuk that was quoted in the Gemara text at this point was Pasuk Gimel, as opposed to the Pasuk of Harimu Lechem, which was Pasuk Hey. Here we have Pasuk Gimel, with the a reference made to stones. Heim Shekimu Bahar Eval Ubonu HaMizbeach V'Kiplum V'Kovum B'Gilgal. These are the stones that they carried with them to Har Eval. We spoke about Har Egrizim and Har Eval in our previous Shiurim, and they set up an altar there with these stones, and then they folded them up, so to speak, and they carried them to Gilgal, which was their first, their initial place of encampment. Now, let's continue in the in the Gemara, regarding these stones, the Gemara spends a little time on their size. Omar Rebbe Yossi, Abba Chalafto, Rebbe Lezer ben Masio, V'chanani ben Chachinoi. Rebbe Yossi was a later Tana, speaks about an earlier generation, could be his own father's generation. Abba Chalafto is a reference to Rabbi Yossi's own father, quite possibly, and two others, Rabbi Lozer ben Masya and Hananya ben Chachinoi, Omdu al Oysam Avonim. They stood by those stones. They were still aware of the stones, Vashi Arum, and they calculated, Kol Achas V'Achas Shkula Karboim Sa. They calculated that each stone weighed 40 Sa. However, that translates into whatever it translates into metric terms, that is a separate story, but it's a measure, 40 saw. Ugimiri, and we have a tradition to Te'una de Madli Inish le Kasfe, Tilsa de Te'une Havi. The tradition is that the weight that a person can carry when he picks up something by himself onto his shoulder is 1/3 the amount that a person can pick up when being assisted by someone else. So it's the calculation here is certainly not 1 + 1 = 2, but rather the amount that you, when you pick something up by yourself and put it on your shoulder, you should know that you with the assistance of someone else, you could pick up something off the ground 3 times that weight. Now that information has bearing on what you see in the continuation of this source. We have a bracket that we've put into our Mark Gemaras. The brackets here are not for skipping purposes, but we have a note on the side. So, Gram Elu Einom L'Shem Dilug, Elo Hosafnu Oysom Al Pi Rashi L'Kama Daf Lamed Helmet Aleph, Dimasa V'Kivon She'olo Ayin Shom. Rashi later on Daf Lamed Hey Omed Aleph, where this Tanaic source picks up the source will be picking up from the point that we just learned concerning the weight of the stones, and at that point in the Gemara on Daf Lamed Hey Amud Aleph, the source will continue with the crossing of the Yarden. However, there's an interruption in the logical flow, and that's what we have over here. Mikan, let's continue reading in the Gemara. Mikan ato mechashev la eshkol. From this, you can then calculate the size and weight of the cluster of grapes that the spies sent by Moshe Rabbeinu had taken back with them from their scouting of the land back to Moshe Rabbeinu to show what the land is capable of producing. So, how big was the Eshkol? So, the pasuk says Shinemar regarding that cluster, says Vayisauhu Bemot Bishnayim. Mot is a pole. So the pasuk says, and they carried it using a pole with two. Now Mimachma Shinemar Bemot Ein Yodeh B'Sheh Bishnayim. If you're dealing with something carried on a mot, let's just make the assumption is a very long pole. It's not something that a person ever carries by himself. It's something that you need to have two people carrying. So, ma tamud lomar bishnayim. So, wouldn't it have been enough for the pasuk to say vayasauhu bemot? If the point is that something was carried on with two people were carrying it, just say vayasauhu bemot. The mot by definition requires two people. Why does the pasuk add the word bishnayim? The answer to that is bishnei motos. The cluster of grapes was supported on two poles. The Bishnayim is not a reference to the number of people. It's a reference to the number of poles. Omer Reb Yitzchok, Turtani, V'Turtani, the Turtani. And it wasn't just two poles and that's it, but Rashi explains the term Turtani, Turtani, Masui, Umasui, Tachas Masui. And we'll explain that as we go on in the Gemara. A Masui is a burden, something that's being carried. So Rabbi Yitzchok says it was a burden within a burden. Ha Ketzad, how are we to explain this? Shmoina Nosu Eshkol. There were There were 8 people involved in the carrying of the Eshkol. There happens to be different explanations in how this took place, what the setup was. We're providing one of the different explanations based on our reading of Rashi over here. There were two parallel poles. Now, each pole requires 2 people. And ultimately, the cluster of grapes is attached to this arrangement. So you had 2 parallel poles, and that means you have 4 people involved with 2 parallel poles. But in addition to that, from one pole to the next, there was another diagonal pole, and an additional diagonal pole. So you have a type of, if you're looking at this from the air, you can imagine you have 2 parallel poles and an X in between. And those, each one of the parallel poles, another 2 people per pole. You have a total here of 4 poles, and then hence 8 people. And that teaches us, the result is that we're Shmoina Nosu Eshkol, 8 carried the cluster of grapes. Echad Nosa Rimon, there were 12 spies that were sent. So 8 are accounted for in carrying the cluster of grapes. 1 carried the Rimon. Rimon is a type of fruit, often translated as a pomegranate. And the Echad Nosa Tainon, 1 carried a fig. That is a total of 10 people carrying fruits. Yoshua v'Kolev lo nosu klum. Yoshua and Kolev, they did not carry anything. They were aware that this was all part of a scheme to speak evil of the land of Israel, and they would have no part in it. If we take a look in Rashi, to show you where we got our explanation from, Rashi, Omer b'Yisrael turtani, v'turtani, d'turtani, masui, u'masui, tachas masui, sh'atachtoinim, mesayim, esuel yoinim. The lower ones helped the upper ones. Ubechol echon hayushnei moitois, and each one, each masui, there were 2 poles. So ketzad, how is this to be? What's the configuration? Shnei moitois hochem ze etzel ze, 2 poles walking one next to the other. That's, as we explained before, 2 parallel poles. Varbo noisim oisom. For 2 poles, you'd have 4 people, at one person at the end of each pole. Ushnei moitos achirim, and then 2 more poles. Varbo b'nei odom noisim oisom. V'heim ba'alach soin mitachas shnayim hel yoinim. And those 2 additional poles were positioned in a diagonal. Mot echod l'rosh ho'echod, u'mot echod l'rosh hasheni. Indicating a crisscross type thing, the end of one pole touching one diagonal pole touching the ends, the extremes of one of the parallel poles, and likewise with the other. V'hochin balachson, and they walked that way in the diagonal, and the my understanding is that the cluster of grapes was attached to, just for, let's say, illustration purposes, we'll say the cluster of grapes was attached to the two parallel poles, and the diagonal poles were positioned underneath the parallel poles, offering additional support, additional structural support to this whole configuration. Rashi adds, Rabbi Yitzchok lav mikro shmi alei. Rabbi Yitzchok wasn't coming to his conclusion of this configuration, having 8 people with the 4 poles set up the way it was from the scripture. From the scripture itself, we accounted for 2 poles, but Rabbi Yitzchok accounts for a total of 4 poles. Ela de pshita lei, rather, to him it was obvious, the rimon teina shagi bishnayim, the rimon fruit and the teina fruit, each one of those, one person would be enough, so together 2 people took care of them. Yeshua and Kolev lo nosu klum. The Yeshua and Kolev didn't carry anything because they knew that this was all part of an evil scheme. Poshu lutanyo leshkol. That would leave a balance of 8 people for the 3rd fruit that the Torah mentions, namely the cluster of grapes. Let's turn back to the Gemara. Before we continue in the Gemara itself, we're going to encounter diamonds shortly. And under the Mivneh heading that you see at the lower part of the margin, Machloikis Amoroyim B'Shitas HaTanoim B'Ezit Surah Avru Yisrael Es Hayardein. We'll see the Machloikis Tanoim, Machlokes Amoroyim, and Amoraic Machlokes within the Machlokes Tanoim concerning the form the Jewish people took in crossing the Yarden. There was one last phrase of the Gemara that's still related to the Tanaic source that we read regarding Yoshua and Kalev. Why did they not carry anything? So, number one, one is they were of high stature. The choshev means they were important. They were more important, let's say, greater stature than the rest of the spies. And it's beneath their dignity to carry things. The other approach is like we suggested earlier, that Yoshua and Kalev didn't want to participate in their etzah, in their scheme. The scheme of the other 10 emissaries. Continuing in the Gemara, Pligi bo Rabbi Ami v'Rabitzot Nafcha. These are two Amoroim. Chadomar, one said, L'divrei Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that the water reached the height of 12 mil. We continue on the top of Omid Beis, Kichanayosan Avru. They crossed the Jordan in their entire camp form, not in single file, but rather as they had traveled in the Midbar, and the Torah describes and specifies how they traveled in the Midbar, but it was an encampment of people measuring, as we said before, 12 by 12 mil, and they crossed, let's say, in form across the river. And Ludivrei Reb Elazar ben Shimon, according to him, who said the water reached the height of 300 mil, bozeh acharzeh over, they crossed in single file. So that's one Amoraic approach to the Machlokes Tanoim. V'chad Omar, here you see our second diamond, bein mor ubein mor kechanosen ovru. According to the second Amoraic opinion, even according to Reb Elazar ben Shimon, who said that the water reached a very great height, nevertheless, the people crossed in full camp form. They didn't cross in single file. Mor sovar odom kal, umor sovar mayim kalim. The second diamond, which says that both Tanoim held that they crossed in camp form. So you might ask, well, if they crossed in camp form, what was the need for the water to reach such a great height? So that's because he holds, in other words, Reb Elazar ben Shimon holds that Mayim Kalim, the water is very, very fast, so that even though the people constitute, relatively speaking, a small dimension, only 12 mil, since the water flow is so swift, once it reaches the height of, it would have to reach a height of 300 mil in order for the slow-moving people to get across, measuring only 12 mil of let's say, people distance. The other opinion who says that all that was needed was for the water to reach 12 mil, holds that man walks swiftly enough like water, so that they could all get across, since they're moving in camp form, and the water, by reaching a height of 12 mil, will be enough time for them, for the people who are, relatively speaking, swift moving, to get across. At this point, the Gemara starts a sugya that we've termed meraglim. We have a general topic heading, And it involves the spies. And hence, since we're calling it a general topic heading, you realize this is a heading that covers many other subtopics. And this discussion takes us till Daf Lamed Hey Omid Aleph, the spies. The Pasuk says in Sefer Bamidbar, at the beginning of Parshas Shlach, it says, Shlach Lecho Anashim. The Parsha of Shlach opens with the sending of the 12 spies in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, by Moshe Rabbeinu, to scout out the land. And this Pasuk is a Pasuk said by the Almighty, Shlach Lecho Anashim. Omer Reish Lakish, Shlach Lecho Midaitcha. Send them, but it's send them on your own volition. Midaitcha, Rashi adds, I'm not commanding you to send them. It's the Jewish people that are insisting on their being sent. But I'm not commanding that. But on the other hand, I'm not going to stop you either, says the Almighty to Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Gemara explains, as far as why is it not a divine command? Why can't we understand this as God commanding thusly? So the Gemara explains, it couldn't be that way. V'chi odom ze borer chelek ra li atzmo. And we look in Rashi, klum yesh odom. We don't have the word klum in our Gemara, but Rashi has that. Girsa, klomar im hakodesh baruch hu tziva, if the Almighty would have been the one to command, klum hoya oimer lo, lasas dovash shesofo, lavo, lide takola, would the Almighty have issued a command to do something whose result would be takol is a very big stumbling block, a very big, let's say, dismal failure with disastrous results, which is the case, which in fact is the case with regard to these miraglim, the spies that were sent. So, since we know the outcome, you can rest assured that a person that the Almighty wasn't the one that made this as a direct command. The pasuk goes on, v'hainu, the Gemara that is goes on and says, v'hainu dichti vayita be'einai hadavar. Moshe Rabbeinu says it was that this matter of sending the spies appeared good in my eyes. V'yomer ish lokish be'einai v'lo be'einov shalmokum. In my eyes is a limitation. My eyes and not in the eyes of the Almighty. The Pasuk says in Devarim, Perek Aleph Pasuk Chof Beis, where Moshe Rabbeinu is telling over, he's reviewing his history with the Jewish people, and he tells them regarding this incident of the spies, v'yachberu lanu es haaretz. The term v'yachberu lanu es haaretz, loosely translated, means they would be sent out to scout out the land. But the word v'yachberu is an unusual word, we'll say. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, meraglim lo niskavnu ela l'boishosu shel Eretz Yisrael. The spies' intent was to insult the land of Israel. In other words, at the very beginning, that was their scheme. The Rashi, he has maybe a slightly different take on it. We translated the Gemara as it is. Rashi, Levoishosu Shel Eretz Yisrael, Rashi says, Oison Shesho'alu Tchilo Shiluach HaMeraglim. Those that sought out this plan. It wasn't that these 12 men came up with the idea on their own, as we alluded to before. Rather, the people requested this to be done. And according to Rashi, the Boishosu Shel Eretz Yisrael was on the mind of the people that sought out the sending of the spies. And how do we know that? Ksiv hocha v'yachbru lonu es haaretz. Uksiv hasam in Yeshaya Perech Chav Dalet Pasuk Chav Gimel, it says v'chofra halavana uvoisha hachama v'chulei. And by way of juxtaposition of terms, bosha is a well-known word meaning embarrassment, insult, and hence chofra is also taken to mean that. The Pasuk in Yeshaya deals with the embarrassment of the moon and the sun, but For our purposes, we've dashed, underlined the key phrases. Notice the similarity, the same root of these two words. Hence, when you're dealing with the issue of the spies, where the pasuk says "Yachbu lo nasaretz," it's a reference to seeking out the embarrassment of the land. On the side of our Gemara, we have a topic heading which reads "Shmoisim shal Meraglim Matzvim al Maaseim." The names of the Meraglim, as is featured in the Torah, actually are descriptions of their ways. There's a concept that you see in the Gemara. It's sourced in Maseches Brochus. It's called Shem Goreim. That the name, and that concept appears elsewhere, appears also in Maseches Chulin, that the name of a person actually says something about that individual's personality, that individual's ways. So we continue now in the Gemara. V'elish Moisam Lemate Ruven Shamua Ben Zakur. This is back into Parshas Shlach and Sefer Bamidbar. The pasuk lists off the names of the 12 spies. Omer Rabbi Yisroel, note him, we have a number one. A few lines later, Rabbi Yochanan adds to what Rabbi Yitzchak says here, and we call Rabbi Yochanan number two. So Omer Rabbi Yisroel, Dover Zeh Masoros B'Yodeinu Me'Avoseinu. The following is something we have as a Masoros, a tradition from our forebears. Meraglim Al Shem Maaseim Nikru'u. The names of the Meraglim that the Torah reports are actually a description of their ways. V'onu lo olsa b'yodenu ela echad. And Rabbi Yitzchak says, we have deciphered only one of them. And the following is the scout that's sent representing the tribe of Osher. And it says in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Sisur ben Michael. That's the name that's given. And the name means Sosur equals Shesosar Maisov Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Michael Shaosa Atzmoi Moch. Let's take a look together at the Rashi. The Rashi you see in the upper part of the narrow lines. Sosar Dvorov Hikhish V'osa Sono Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Badoi. He Sosar is to contradict. He contradicted the Almighty's plan and made it such, presented it such as if the Almighty, Rashi, I believe, is presenting this in a euphemistic form, but you have to understand what he's saying. It's as if the Almighty is a badoy, is one that doesn't say the truth. So he was going to say a report that would reflect to the contrary of what the Almighty had in mind. The next Rashi, Shasa Soinish HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moch. Moch means Cholosh, weak. Kedamrin Lekamar Afil Baal Abayas Ene Yoch Lotzi Kelov Misham. Part of their report was that the inhabitants of the land are Kichozok Hu Mimenu, it says, they're stronger than Mimenu. Now the word Mimenu is could mean say second person singular. I should say third person singular, or mimenu. Let me correct myself. It's first person, stronger than us, first person plural, or third person singular, him. Him, in this case, a reference, him spelled with a capital H, so that the report that they brought back, Sisur ben Michael being one of them, was that the nations that inhabit the land are stronger than him, with a capital H. And that, namely, that he is moch, is weak. And we will not be able to conquer the land. Who will help us? Omar Rabbi Yochanan Af, Onu Nomar. We're continuing, as you can see in the Gemara, with a second name from Pasuk Yudalid. This is the emissary from the tribe of Naphtali. His name was Nachbi ben Vofsi. Nachbi, what does that mean? Sheikh B Dvorov Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vofsi Shepisa Al Midoisov Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And again, let's look at Rashi. Sheikh B Dvorov. Hichbi is to hide something. V'lo amoron k'moshen. He didn't say over as it actually was. Shepisa, delayed, skipped over. Shelo amoron k'asher heim. Same idea reflected in his name and the father's name. Covering over, skipping over, not saying things as they actually were. On the side, we have a topic heading, the Nosei. Kolev, Hispala B'mora Samachpelu, Linotzel Mi'atza Samaraglim. Kolev went out of his way, literally, and reached the cave of Machpelo. That's the cave in which the Ovos were buried, Mora Samachpelo, where the Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and their wives were buried. He prayed there, hoping to receive divine assistance in the merit of the of our forefathers and the matriarchs and patriarchs that are buried there. In their merit, he should be able to exercise enough, say, self-restraint, self-control, and not yield to the pressure of the other spies and their insidious plan. The Gemara. Vayalu Banegev Vayavo ad Chevron. In this pasuk, if you note the way we've marked things, the word Vayalu is a verb form. We've highlighted the Vav at the end of the word. That's in the plural form. And they Vayalu Banegev, they arose from the south. And Vayavo is in the singular. So in the same pasuk, you have two verbs, one in the plural and the second one in the singular. Vayavo'u miboyale. If the pasuk is beginning in the plural form, that vayalu, they arose, vayavo'u, it should have been in the plural form, they arrived at Chevron, but it doesn't say that. Oma rova melamed. This change in grammatical form teaches us that piresh kolev me'atzes meraglim. Kolev separated himself from their scheme. V'halach v'nishtatech al kivrei avosav. He went and prostrated himself on our forebearer's grave. Omar Lohen. Kolev said to the Ovos, Avosai, Bakshu olai rachamim she'enotzel me'atzas meraglim. Pray on my behalf that I should be spared, I should be saved from the scheme of the spies. You see here a number of interesting and profound ideas. First and foremost, of course, is the strength of social pressure. I would go out on a limb and say social pressure is so great that a person on his own probably would have no chance in withstanding it. One needs divine intervention in order to resist the social pressure. In other words, a person can be well aware of what's right and what is wrong, and nevertheless, in the context of social pressure, who are pursuing an evil, a negative path, one will end up falling to that pressure unless he has some supernatural intervention, and in order to arouse that, prayer is needed. And notice the concept or the practice of going to graves and praying there, of course, here is a primary source for that, but no one should ever make the hideous error of thinking that one is praying to the dead. What you see here is a request of the spirits of those that are no longer with us to assist in prayer, to pray on one's behalf. But the ultimate address of prayers is the one and only address, namely the Almighty. And one should never make the mistake to think anything else. So that's as far as Kolev is concerned. Yehoshua, we don't see him going to pray. Kvar bikesh Moshe olav rachamim. Moshe Rabbeinu already prayed for the benefit of Yoshua. Shenemar Vayikra Moshe Lehoshea ben Nun Yoshua. The Yoshua's official name, his real name, or his birth name was Hoshea. We see in the pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu refers to him as Yoshua, adding a yud to his name. The yud is a letter that's associated with the Almighty. Ka Yoshiacha Me'atzas Meraglim. Ka is the name of the Almighty, one of his many different names. Let him save you, protect you, save you from the evil counsel of the spies. Behainu dichtiv v'avdi kolev ekev hoisa ruach acheres imo v'chule. We take a look at Rashi. The Rashi that we're looking at is in the upper third of the page. Behainu dichtiv avdi kolev v'havi oisiv el horetz asher bo shama v'hi chevron ki dichtiv v'yitein es chevron l'kolev sh'ma'amino kolev hu de'ozil l'chevron. From this pasuk, you can see that Kolev is the one that went to Chevron. We now turn back to the Gemara. The Pasuk in Bamidbar, Perek, Yud Gimel, Pasuk Chof Beis, we have included it on the side of the Gemara, and let's read it together. Vayalu Banegev, Vayavoy Ad Chevron. We already darshan that. The spies entered the land from the south, and we said Kolev reached Chevron. V'sham, there in Chevron, Sham Achiman Sheshai V'Tamai Yilidei Ho'anok V'Chevron Sheva Shonim Nivnesa Lifnei Tzoan Mitzrayim. In Chevron there were the children of the giant. Their names were Achiman Sheshai and Tamai, and the Pasuk says that Chevron was 7 years built before Tzoan Mitzrayim. That's a literal translation. The Gemara is going to question that as the real meaning of the pasuk. So now we continue in the Gemara text in pasuk Chof Beis. It says, "V'shom Achiman Sheshai V'Talmai V'Chule." There are two approaches to the names. The first approach is darshaning the names, explaining about these. These giants were children of a giant. They had names that describe them. And then the second approach is a Dovar Acher, you can see a few lines later, which is not a description of them, but rather what they built. So the first approach, and it says, Achiman Miyumon She Ve'echov. He was the Miyumon. Miyumon is a word meaning the choicest, the best, the strongest of his brothers. Sheshai, and that you can see, by the way, in the word Achiman, you see the word Ach, or with reference to brothers, and the Yud Mem Nun ending having to do with Yamin or Miyuman, the choicest one. Sheshai, that name, Shemesim Es Haoretz Kishchisos, Kishchosos. He was so big, so large, that as he walked along, he would make, it would appear as craters in the ground. The Rashi says, Sha'isa Esaros Kishchisos. Rashi has a yud in the word, hence the pronunciation of Shchisos. Shemokoim Raglov Mamik Boretz Mirov Kovdo. His foot would actually sink into the ground, creating a depression in the ground because of his immense weight. V'nikur Shom Keguma Ukeshachas. And after he passed that place, as he would walk along, there would remain a type of depression, a crater in the ground. The Rashi adds that the Loshon Sheshai lo purash lanu mai domi lishchisus. V'nira Loshon Amudei Shesh Shem Kevedim Umokum Amodam Nikar. The word itself, Sheshai, Rashi says, I don't see a connection between that and the word Shchosos, or Shachas. So he suggests that it's Sheshai is a word reflecting marble pillars. And marble pillars have great weight, and if you were to remove a marble pillar from where it was standing, it would leave a depression in the ground. Hence, the description of the Gemara Kishchosos. Continuing in the Gemara, Talmai, Shemesim es Haaretz Tlomim Tlomim. Here, it's in the name. He would, after walking, he would leave what would appear as furrows in the ground. Tlomim, a telomim achresha, is a furrow after a plow plows an area, so the plow blade digs down into the ground and kicking up earth on either side of a ditch that's made. So too, as he would walk along, that's what would happen to the ground underfoot. Dovar Acher, another approach. Achiman Bona Anas, Sheshai Bona Alash, Tamai Bona Talbush. These are three different places that each one of these individuals built up. Yelidei Ho'anok. This too is from the Pasuk. Shemanikim Chamo Bekoimosam. Rashi explains, Shoyumanikim as a Chamo Bekoimosam, Merov Goiva Koimosam, because of their incredible height, you, a person of average, of normal height, would look up into the sky, looking to where this giant's head was, and it would appear, it would create an impression that you would only see the outer perimeter of the sun, giving the impression that the sun was a type of necklace around their necks. In other words, that their heads were going to, they were basically, their heads were eclipsing the body of the sun, leaving only the corona of the sun still visible. The word anak, manikim, has to do with a necklace, so that all that you saw of the sun was the outer perimeter, giving this necklace impression. Outer circumference. The Pasuk says, V'chevron sheva shonim nivnasa. We read that also before. My nivnasa. What does it mean that Chevron was something 7 years built up? In order to figure this out, we go through a couple stages. And on the side of the Gemara, we have under our Mivneh heading, this double underline highlights the words Ilema Ela. Shlavim bebiur ha-pasuk v'chevron sheva shonim nivnasa lifnei tzon mitzrayim. So let's go through the stages. The first stage, Ilema nivnasa mamish, if you're going to read the pasuk literally. And the literal reading would be that Chevron was built 7 years before Tzon Mitzrayim. Tzon being a place in Mitzrayim. Well, could that be? Efshur odam boine bayis livnoi koton kodem livnoi godol. Would a person build a house for his younger son before he builds a house for his older son? And what's the reference to older and younger over here? You'll see that immediately. Dichtiv, uvnei chom, the sons of Chom. Chom was one of the three sons of Noach. Well, the children of Chom, called say Noach's grandchildren, their names were Cush, Umitzrayim, Ufut, Uknan. Now, in the order, you notice Mitzrayim precedes Canaan. Chevron was in Canaan. Tzoan was in Mitzrayim. So, as far as the chronological order is concerned, Mitzrayim comes before Canaan. So that any reference to something being built up, it would obviously, Mitzrayim would precede that which was in Canaan. Hence, you can't say that Chevron was built up, Chevron representing Canaan, it was in the land of Canaan, being built up before Mitzrayim. Elo, so here's the answer. Note, we have a long answer marking. Elo shehoise mevune al echod mishiva betzoan. It was seven times better quality. Mevune has to do with something that's built up in terms of size and quality. So it was seven times better than Tzoan, which was in Mitzrayim. The Ein L'cha. Now, what we're going on in this Gemara, we had the topic heading we should have read a little earlier, B'shvacha Shel Eretz Yisrael. You'll see how we're going to describe in very praise, in very, let's say, complimentary ways, praiseworthy fashion, the quality of the land of Israel. The Gemara will tell us, before we read the text, the Gemara will tell us that Hebron, relative to the rest of the land of Israel, was the poorest land, let's say, land quality-wise. Everyone, I'm sure, is aware of the fact that there are certain qualities of earth that are more fertile than others. Hebron was the least fertile of the lands in Israel, in Canaan. And even so, the Gemara will describe that Hebron, the poorest part of Eretz Yisrael, was seven times better than the best land in Mitzrayim, which was said to be the most fertile area of the world at that time. So the Gemara says, Elo, Shoysu Mevuna, Alechot Mishiva B'Tzoan, Hebron was seven times better than Tzoan. Ve'ein l'cho Troshim b'chol Eretz Yisrael Yeser mi'Hebron. Troshim has to do with rocks and boulders. There's no more, we'll say, desolate area in Eretz Yisrael more than Hebron. The Kavri Bo Shichvi, it's a place that was known for its cemetery. Shichvi means are the dead, that the dead were buried there. You can surmise from here that even though we associate Hebron with the Moras HaMachpelah, the place where the our forefathers were buried, it was a choice place for burial because, well, what else would you do over there, so to speak? And there was no more fertile area, more desirable area amongst nations more than Mitzrayim. Shenemar, Kigan Hashem Keretz Mitzrayim. The land of Mitzrayim is described as the garden of the Almighty. So it's a very desirable, fertile area. V'ein l'chom u'lu b'chol Eretz Mitzrayim yeser mitzoyan. And of all of Eretz Mitzrayim, which was said to be fertile, the best of Eretz Mitzrayim was Tzoan. Tehtiv kihoyu b'tzoan sorov. In Tzoan were the ministers. You can imagine the ministers would occupy the choicest land. V'afilu hachi Hebron mivuna echod mishiva b'tzoan. And even so, Hebron was seven times better than the best place in Mitzrayim, the best place in the world. The Gemara asks, the Hebron Troshim Avu, and I hope it's clear before we go further, I should say, that what was the purpose of this last discussion? The purpose was to explain the pasuk that said, Hebron Sheva Shanim Nivnesa, where it said it was Nivnesa Lefnei Tzom Mitzrayim. It was built up quality-wise, going way ahead of Tzoan of Mitzrayim, but not chronologically. Here the Gemara asks, is all of this really so? V'chevron troshim havi? Was it really a rocky, coarse terrain, v'hoksiv? It says, the pasuk here makes reference to the son of David HaMelech, Avshalom, who went to Hebron to bring forth a sheep that that grazed there. And from the question, we're going to see that Hebron was actually a very desirable area for sheep grazing. And that would seem to indicate that it's not simply some type of rocky, lunar-type surface. The question in the Gemara: the Hebron Troshim Havi, where Hebron was rocky, v'oksiv, v'yimi ketzar boim shana v'yomer Avshalom el haMelech el chono v'chulei. And in order to appreciate the pasuk in its, you'd have to really look at it in its context. The Omar of Avio v'temo Rabo bar Hanon. The pasuk that we just read mentioned that Avshalom said to David, King David, I'm going to go. And Rav Avia says, Shaholach lohavi kvosim echevron. He went to bring sheep from Hebron. V'tanya elim mimoav, rams one would bring from Moav. If one is seeking animals for sacrificial purposes, the best quality rams are found in Moav. And kvosim echevron. We've dashed underlined that. That's the main point. Kvosim echevron. So Hebron was a place that people would raise sheep. Sheep need grazing land. So how can you describe it as Troshim? The Gemara answers, Mina, from the very point that Kvosim were brought from Hebron, Aidi de Klisha Ara Avdo Raya. Since It's a weak land. It's not fertile. It's not land that produces vegetation, but rather, we'll say wild grasses and thorns, that type of thing grows there. And that is actually the desirable land for grazing. That's v'shomein kinyona. Rashi says, v'shomein kinyona, hamikne hatzon, the kinyona is a reference to the term mikne. You find the word mikne in the Chumash as a term associated with flocks of sheep and goats. So it's rich for the fact that it's rocky and not fertile actually produces that type of, let's say, pasture land or grazing land. The growth that develops there is more suitable for the raising of sheep than ground that would be more fertile. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.